Good evening. This is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My guest tonight is Lita Judge, author and illustrator of several award-winning picture books for young readers. And tonight we're talking about her latest book for adults, Mary's Monster, Love, Madness, and How Mary Shelley Created Frankenstein. Lita, welcome to the show. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm very excited to be on your show.
This book threw me for a loop. Well, you know, I'm familiar, actually, with your children's books, which, I mean, there's How Big Were Dinosaurs, The Red Sled, Flight School, Bird Track. This was a completely different, like, enterprise.
Yeah.
And it's really tense and fascinating and dark. What led you to do this project?
You know, it's a story that was speaking to me. I was going through a difficult time period in my life when I sat down to create this book. About 8 years ago, I caught a virus, which turned into an autoimmune illness that, until we found the right medication, I was basically, for the first time in my life, not able to create. And, you know, my whole identity is wrapped in creating. But because of this illness, I didn't have the use of my hands and couldn't walk, couldn't create, basically spent the better part of 2 years in bed. And during that time, what really got me through was leaning on the work of others. Since I couldn't make my own books, I was immersing myself in the classics. And I stumbled across Frankenstein, and I had read it when I was very young, and it spoke to me on the immediate levels of kind of this monster horror story. But as I read it again, having gone through what I was going through, I was really struck by this remarkable young woman. The fact that she was 18 when she started writing this book, and the fact that she was a pregnant teenage runaway, just really spoke to me, because I thought, my goodness, you know, what had she gone through in order to create this creature? The book itself is incredibly serious. It's a radical social criticism. It's about suffering and isolation and banishment. And I figured she must have been going through that. And, you know, during the time period of my own illness, I was facing isolation. And I really kind of clung to Mary Shelley, the girl behind the book, to kind of get through that period of my life. And a friend knew that I had become completely involved in this book, and tracked down a copy of her journals, because I just kept saying over and over again, I just wanted to know the girl behind the story. And in the course of the 3 months that I was able to spend with these journals, reading her own words and reading all the things that she had gone through, I really found the strength that I needed to do, needed in order to get through my own dark period. So I kind of vowed, if I ever got healthy, which fortunately I did, I felt like I needed to honor her. I felt like she had published her book anonymously, and I think history has been kind of unkind to her memory. I think she's been often portrayed as kind of a bitter housewife aristocrat, when in fact she was this brilliant rebel of a teenager fighting for justice and fighting for the right to just create. And so I really kind of promised myself, if I ever got to create again, that I would tell her story.
It was interesting when I read about your autoimmune disease and how it affected your body. And I was wondering if part of the appeal of the monster too, it's like a body gone crazy.
Oh, that was so much a part of, I think anybody who reads the story can't help but feel very empathetic for the story, for the creature. But I remember I was going through a chemotherapy and all this physical therapy, because I lost about a third of my body weight. And I was going through these painful physical therapy treatments, and sometimes I would actually break out laughing. My physical therapist would kind of be startled by my, my reaction. And I was just feeling like, oh, this is what it's like to be the creature. And all of that energy was just like turning back into the creativity. And in so many ways, I mean, it can kind of seem Pollyanna, but in the creating this book was very healing, because it allowed me to walk through the path of this remarkable girl and understand what she was creating in a way that I think if I hadn't been going through all those physical challenges, you know, it wouldn't have resonated to me with quite the same intensity.
Is this your first book for adults?
It is, yes.
Was that a huge leap of faith for yourself too? Because you're so known for young people's literature and illustrations. Was this a total sort of scary departure too, to write for adults?
It was absolutely terrifying. I worked on it for about a year without telling anybody other than my husband. And he was, you know, really just had this firm conviction that I needed to do this, as did I. I mean, we both felt like so personally attached to this story. But for a long time, I couldn't even tell anybody because it was just such a huge departure. And I knew if I said what I was working on, people just wouldn't get it. You know, if you've seen my work, it just seems like too far of a leap. And in fact, even my own publisher, when he saw the work, I've been told that he immediately assumed it was a different Lita Judge, which is
Well, but, Lita, could you get any darker?
Yeah.
To describe for the audience, the amazing thing about this book, which just blew my socks off, is every opening of the two pages is a single huge painting of yours. Now, what are you using for materials to execute the colors? I mean, this is basically gray washes and what?
Yeah, it's ink and watercolor, little pencil. I'm really traditional in how I paint, and also with Mary Shelley herself, you know, it would be inappropriate to do the work in any other way, I think, than to be traditional. Plus, I really wanted to create these, like, searing, haunting images.
Oh,
I wanted
God.
People to, you know, feel viscerally what she was going through. So
you totally accomplished that. I found this one of the – first of all, I didn't know enough about her story. And as you mentioned, everybody, you know, has heard the tale. You know, it was a dark and stormy night in the castle, and then people were telling ghost stories, and she came up with, you know, Frankenstein or Prometheus Unbound. And in fact, that's probably not what happened at all, that this book was a long time coming based on a lot of experiences that she had.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, she wrote about what happens, you know, when we treat people cruelly. She wrote about what happens when a being is forced to be isolated and completely banished. And she herself felt that way. She was this young girl that her mother gave birth to her and then died within a few days of her birth, and her father married this like stepmother out of fairy tales, you know, this woman who was just incredibly abusive towards her. And by the time she was 13, she was sent away from home, just completely banished. And when she came home, she was only home for a few weeks, and she fell in love with a married man. She herself was conceived. Her parents were Mary Wollstonecraft and William Godwin, and they weren't married when they conceived her, and they spoke out for the rights of women, and they spoke out for the rights of and at that time women were treated like property. It was legal for a man to abuse his wife, and they spoke for the rights of women, and they kind of set her up to believe that this was an appropriate thing to do. And then as soon as she falls in love with a married man, he banishes her from his home, and you know, she faced these horrible challenges. Really, I think, you know, led to this, you know, long before this stormy night. I think also the legend of the stormy night, you know, it's an artifact to the fact that she had to publish her work anonymously.
That's right.
And when I was working on the book, if I mentioned Mary Shelley, a lot of people said, oh, wasn't that like a dare by Lord Byron? You know, it seemed like the very inception of the book was kind of the credit for it was being handed to the well-known male author of the time rather than this remarkable teenager. And so, yeah, my goal was to try to get down to the truth of that and scrape back the layers of what really provoked her to write this book, because this book did not come out of a simple dare. You know, there's just so much depth to this work. It's been around for 200 years, and it's one of the most read texts of all time. So it just wasn't a simple flippant dare created out of, you know, I think the legend is that Byron was bored and said, let's write a ghost story.
Now, sticking with your illustrations, because they really work in this book. Did you storyboard the whole book before?
I did.
Okay, that makes sense to me. It totally makes sense to me.
Yeah, it's an incredibly labor-intensive way to write it. And in fact, when I first set out to do it, there really wasn't a book. You know, it's told in free verse and...
Don't just slough off that it's told in free verse, because that's another extraordinary thing about this book, that it's told in free verse. Not only did you write and illustrate this incredible book, you decided to tell the entire story in free verse, which just blew my mind.
I felt like when I was creating the book, I was so in awe of the fact that Mary Shelley herself had really created a new form of storytelling. You know, she was the first to write this mad scientist archetype. She was also one of the pioneers in getting away from didactic forms of storytelling, and she told her story in three voices. And I felt like to honor that, I needed to create kind of a new form. I also felt like a graphic novel, I mean, for me, I'm a visual storyteller, so I knew from the get-go it was going to have illustrations, but as I kind of grappled with the form, I felt like a graphic novel wouldn't do it because inherently you sell out the art and there's white spaces between the cells, and every time I tried to sell out an action, I just felt like I was losing this haunting imagery that I wanted to create. And then I felt like the verse kind of nodded to the fact that she was, you know, in the era of romantic poets. She was married to Percy Shelley. I didn't want to replicate his voice or imitate his voice, but I felt like the form was just appropriate for telling their story.
You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. My guest tonight is Lita Judge. She's the author and illustrator of several award-winning picture books for young readers. But tonight, we're talking about her latest book, which is for adults, Mary's Monster, Love, Madness, and How Mary Shelley Created Frankenstein. The amazing thing is you broke this story and structured into 9 parts. Why?
Well, it worked beautifully in terms of the story itself, just with the elements of her life. But in reading her diary, I was really taken with when she finished creating Frankenstein. She was pregnant. She was just a few weeks away from delivering her child. And she had spent 9 months creating the book. And she was very aware of that. She wrote on the night that she finished that she felt like she was staring into the eyes of yet another prodigy, that of her creature. And I think that the whole idea, you know, the book is sort of this subversive statement about men's ambition. It's a metaphor for science, but it was also, she grew up a block away from the prison in London where the experiments were being done on convicts to try to create life from the dead with electricity. And she was just pretty horrified by this idea that men were trying to kind of co-opt the power of women to create life. You know, she lived in an era when she wasn't allowed to go to school. She wasn't really allowed to have a career. And the thought of men taking away the power of women even to create life, she was feeling like society, men were forging wars, they were causing the tyranny of power was causing a lot of suffering. She thought that, you know, we need to stop and think about this. And so I think her book is really about, even though the women are really forced to the sidelines of her book, as you know, because of the times that she lived in, she was subversively putting a lot of things into her work. For one, the letters to Walton the Explorer, they're written by his sister, and they're dated at the letters start at at her own inception, which she knew the date by reading her father's diaries, and they end with the death of her mother, and that is over a 9-month period of time. And so she was putting in all these symbols about motherhood and birth and death. And so when I went to create the work, I wanted to structure it in a way that kind of honored the fact that she was thinking about these issues when she was creating her work.
So, can I ask you to read one of your pieces?
Yeah, I thought I would read, this is a poem, it's right near the beginning of the book, and I really think it sets off her own feelings of isolation and why she would have created a book about this creature that was, you know, created by the fact that his father, Victor Frankenstein, as soon as he created her, him, he abhorred him and banished him, and all the suffering that ensued from that is what kind of turned him monstrous. So in this poem, it's right near the beginning, and it sets up the fact that she herself felt very isolated in her life. It's called Do Not Return. It's dated June 7th, 1812. That's the date of when she's going through this experience. It starts off. Early summer, in a time of war, when the sea is a battleground and ships are weapons, I find myself on the deck of the Aschenberg, heading for Scotland. Little separates me from the mail and cargo in the ship's hold. I am like a letter stamped Do Not Return, being delivered to a future I cannot know. I try to keep the shoreline in sight, as if this will prevent the wind driving the sails, but gradually, the land recedes into a thin line and then is swallowed completely by bruised-colored clouds. I am left to feel completely alone. And she's only 13 when she is put on the ship. I think it really drove her, you know, so much more than the night of the dare. I think that her feeling of utter isolation and rejection by her father is one of the things that really drove her to create this piece of work.
When I read it, I had the feeling like I was experiencing an opera.
I love that.
A really dark and gothic opera, but an opera nonetheless. I was wondering, are you ever going to perform this, the whole thing, beginning to end?
That would be really cool. It's funny that you should say opera, because it's not too different than what I was thinking, because I was actually thinking of it as an oral play. The book is told in two voices, partly to honor the fact that the creature, she told her novel in three voices. I wanted her creature to speak for himself, because one of the points of the book is this, you know, remarkable teenager creates a creature that we all know. 200 years later, we all know him. He's so iconic to our culture. And so in that reason, she's writing about creating life from death, but I think what she did is she created life from literature. And so I really wanted a dialogue back and forth between her and her creature. And so once the creature enters the stage, there's several poems that are going back between her. So in a way, it does feel very much like a performance.
Yeah, it does. Talk to me about visually representing the creature. That must have been a challenge. And I don't want to give away too much for the listeners about how you depict the creature. The creature's in the book visually. Was that a challenge, coming up with an original depiction of the creature?
Yeah, it wasn't as much of a challenge as I thought, because instinctively I needed to get away from Boris Karloff and De Niro and everybody who's played him. But the answers were all in the text, because Mary Shelley herself, as an author, I felt such a kinship to her because she is such a visual author. She has such rich descriptions in her work. And I felt really strongly like she led the way and told me what this creature physically looked like. The part that artistically I put into the creature was that I felt like there were a lot of parallels between the creature and the men in her life. There was a lot of parallels between Shelley, the poet that she falls in love with, and the creature. Both of them felt completely isolated and banished by society. He felt vilified because he was, you know, what we now know, producing some of the best poetry being created, but the reviewers would really not review his work. All they would review is his affairs and scandalous behavior.
But Lita, okay, and we're going to run out of time, and we could talk about this book a lot, but the truth of the matter is Mary was in an abusive relationship. I mean, Shelley is not a good person to be living with.
No. And I think that's where some of the parallels come between the physicality of Shelley in the book and the physicality of the creature.
Yes.
And, you know, it's so hard because she's such a strong woman. She's a huge role model to me. But we do have to look at her in terms of her time period. You know, when she made the choice to fall in love with him, she was completely vilified for society. She would never be able to marry. She would never be able to have a career. She really was stranded, and she was stranded.
She was physically stranded. I mean, yes. She was like, he would leave her off in a castle in the middle of vast nowhere.
Yeah, and he was constantly being actually hounded by bailiffs for money, and then also hounded by his own mental. You know, I think he was.
And he had an affair.
Insane.
He had an affair with Claire.
What's that?
He had an affair with Claire.
Yes. I mean, it's interesting putting those pieces together.
Oh my God.
It really destroyed her relationship. Her only relative that she had a relationship with, he then goes and sleeps with her and ruins that relationship for her.
And this is all, by the way, for the benefit of this is all in your book. I mean, this is all there. And like I said, it's like a really dark gothic romance of the dark. And the scary thing is that it's true.
Yeah, that's the really horrifying thing. It's true. And I think it really explains so much why 200 years later we are still talking about her novel. She wrote from a place of such emotional understanding.
Oh my God.
The empathy she wrote into her creature, that you know, the strong feelings that we had towards that novel, they all stem back to her own experiences and what she was going through. And then added on to the fact that she was a woman during this time. Jesus. She was forced to work anonymously. She hardly made any money from this. Shelley drowned shortly after this book was published, and she was completely had to survive on her own means. Wow. So I think it's really remarkable what she was able to accomplish.
Well, she got his heart. Talk to me about how you envision Byron, because I love the way that Byron is pictured in your book.
Byron was the hardest to write for me, because Shelley, it's funny when people read the book, you know, everybody's angry at Shelley, and of course he was terrible. He was absolutely terrible, but I had sympathy for him.
Well, he had sort of a Heathcliff thing going for him.
Yeah. And I think Mary understood on some level.
We could argue about this all day. And that's the great thing about your book, is that you put that kind of richness to the depiction of it. But Byron. Byron was a bozo.
He was the scum of the earth. I mean, to strand Claire, you know, not only does he make her pregnant and ruins her reputation, but then he takes her child away from her and basically says, you know, there's nothing you can do about it.
Other than that, he was a hell of a nice guy.
Yeah.
I want to have you read one more piece, because we're going to run out of time.
Yes, I thought that the next poem I would love to read is Do You Hear Me? And this is the moment when she's experiencing all of these, you know, horrible events in her life, and this is the moment when it all kind of crystallizes for her. It's kind of the moment when the dialogue between her and her creature starts, but for this particular poem, it's just the beginning, so it's mostly Mary. It's called Do You Hear Me? I keep writing until my pen scratches pain as loud as screams, but it is no longer my own voice I hear. It is the creature's. Ink black words on paper are no longer words. They breathe and pulse within a life of their own. They are heart and legs and arms and hands made of flesh and bone, and they reach down my throat and into my lungs and grab my breath and squeeze out my tears until they become the creature's own. His voice calls out to me, "Now, Mary, you begin to see." And I just think that the physicality of the poem, I wanted to capture her creature. Just, he was like a being to her, you know, the talking about giving him birth, the fact that she equated it to the same as the baby that she was giving birth to just a couple of weeks after creating this. I think she really felt the physicality of this being that she was creating. So I was trying to capture that in the poem.
Then you have a nice section about what happened to all the characters after the end of your work. What happened to Mary? Did she finally achieve some recognition for her work?
You know, during her life, it was so sad that copyright laws didn't really protect her. Her work was a phenomenal success. It was
right.
Instantly vilified.
There were plays that came written about
it. 5 years, like all over Europe, and people loved to hate the creature. I mean, it was amazing, because it was so shocking at the time, and I think she kind of braced herself for that. But I think in the end, it was very satisfying to her, because even though financially she really had to struggle, she got to see her creature being embraced by audiences. And she herself, even though even during her lifetime, he was altered and kind of co-opted by other authors. She reveled in that. She loved the fact that her creature was inspiring other authors. She spoke about it to friends. And luckily, she did have a few years of peace. She had one surviving son who was named after his father, Percy Shelley, but grew up to be just a nice guy. And she lived with her son and his wife, and she had a few years of peace before the end of her life, which is kind of nice to know. But most of her life was such a struggle to raise that child, the fact that she could really never get married. And so she mostly wrote like travel articles, and she wrote other novels, and then she spent the rest of her life ensuring Shelley's success, because he was very unknown when he drowned, and she was the one that really guaranteed his legacy within literature.
It's an amazing story. I hope you're going to continue to also write for adults.
Yes, I see this book as a young adult crossover, and
right,
I love
right.
that. I love that age because I,
I tell you, I got totally, in all honesty, I was totally wrapped up in it. It was a different reading experience. The combination of the verse and your paintings really produced a different kind of reading experience, and it was very involving.
Thank you.
It was pretty dramatic, and you really feel for Mary. We're completely out of time. My guest tonight has been Lita Judge, author and illustrator of several award-winning picture books for young readers. But tonight we're talking about her latest book, which is for older young adults and adults, Mary's Monster, Love, Madness, and How Mary Shelley Created Frankenstein. Lita, it's been a real pleasure.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name's Mark Lynch. Good night.